when you hear a show tune from the Great White Way, does a shiver run through ya? Well, we're giving them to ya. Sing hallelujah and shout hooray. Come on along and listen to Broadway to Main Street. USA.
Well, if that theme doesn't sweep you away with the wind, then you have a heart of stone. Hello, this is Larry Maslon, your host for Broadway to Main Street here on 88.3 WLIW-FM, Long Island's only signature, one-of-a-kind, individual NPR station. And that magnificent music is known by generations of Americans. It is Tara's theme from Gone with the Wind, and it is written by Max Steiner, one of, if not the greatest, film composers of Hollywood's golden age. And every August or so, I do one show that gets a little off the Broadway beaten track, you might say, Broadway to Sunset Boulevard, if that wasn't already used as a Broadway title. But we look at film music and the geniuses who are behind it. and their forays sometimes into the world of the legitimate theater. And I have as my guest today, I mean, the gold standard, the absolute charming, wonderful, versatile, eloquent expert on film soundtracks, Stephen C. Smith, who I have the honor of having known for years on various projects. He's also a wonderful documentarian and the author of two great books, Music by Max Steiner, who's Gone with the Wind score we just heard from, and A Heart at Fire Center, The Life and Music of Bernard Herrmann. So welcome to Broadway to Main Street, Stephen.
Well, Larry, it's a pleasure to be with you. I love your show. And I think we have some fun music with some surprises ahead for people.
So maybe we could just start off a little bit before we get to more Max Steiner. Maybe you could articulate for you, what is the gift? What is the difference? What is the wheelhouse, to use a more contemporary term, between a soundtrack composer and a Tin Pan Alley composer?
Well, that is the $64,000 question, and it's one that several of the people we're going to hear from, several of the composers, tried to figure out themselves. And it occurred to me as I looked at the list that we put together, Larry, that all of these composers who are best known for their film work all do have a connection with Broadway, and many of them wanted a hit song and a hit show as much as they wanted a successful film score. So it will be fun to discuss that intersection. To answer your question, I would say that the people we're going to talk about, Max Steiner, Bernard Herrmann, David Raxon, and others, were all superb musical dramatists, and some of them were also excellent melodists.
Well, when you hear Tara's theme from Gone with the Wind, it is not only the magnificent, what would I say, bedrock for that film, right? It tells you everything you need to know about family and tradition and romance. It sounds like Hollywood, all in caps, up on that hill, right, in that sign. So maybe talk a little bit about Max Steiner's role in defining that Hollywood sound, and maybe specifically we could segue to his theme from Now Voyager.
Max Steiner did more than anyone else to create the modern film score as we know it. He came from Broadway. He was an orchestrator and musical director for Gershwin, Kern, Vincent Humans. He worked with Rodgers and Hart. And so when the talkies became the official Hollywood policy in 1929, Max was lured away from Broadway to RKO Studios. And his timing was perfect because, as we all know, the Depression was not a good time for Broadway in 1930-31. And it allowed Max to be the person who convinced reluctant producers and studio executives that movies might actually be better with underscoring, even if the audience couldn't see where the music was coming from. That was the question he had to answer. Won't audiences wonder where the music is coming from? But he did not have many hit songs, in spite of having an extremely successful career, working on some 300 movies, starting at the age of 41, and writing great melodies for dozens and dozens of them. But it's interesting, and for reasons we can briefly talk about afterwards, Now Voyager was one of the only two real record hits that he had.
Well, let us hear a dance version, which I guess would have been played at, the Brown Derby, from the film Now Voyager, music by Max Steiner.
Thank you.
that was the theme from Now Voyager, sort of muzaked up, as many of these themes were, because they wanted to transcend the soundtracks, the films that they were written for, into a more popular idiom. And Max Steiner finally got his hit, but it was came about in a rather strange and from an unexpected place, didn't it?
It certainly did. Here's someone who wrote an operetta in his teens that in Vienna, who worked alongside, as we mentioned, Gershwin, Kernan, so many on Broadway, and yearned to have his own Broadway hit, never did. Well, at age 71, when he had pretty much given up any hope of having a hit record, Max Steiner wrote a theme for the young lovers in a movie called A Summer Place. And that became the surprise success of almost the decade. Billboard magazine listed it as the best-selling instrumental in early rock and roll history. It sold millions of copies. It won the record of the year over Elvis and Sinatra and Ella and others. And it was a phenomenal success that finally solved decades of financial problems that poor Max had. He was an inveterate gambler and big spender in spite of getting very big paychecks. So finally, in his last decade, he could live comfortably thanks to this accidental tune. And he said he wrote it in just a few minutes. He started to use that triplet figure that we hear in so many soft rock ballads of the 50s. And being Max Steiner, he could very easily hum a simple but attractive melody over it. And he was as astonished as anyone when this became one of the song phenomenons of its era.
And it was covered by a number of people, but the Lettermen were the ones that had the biggie?
No, Percy Faith had the big record of it. That's the one that won record of the year.
So what was the name of the poor studio hack who had to write lyrics to this? Do we know?
Well, Mac Descant wrote the ultimate lyrics that accompanied the song.
Not the Mac Descant.
The very
He's
one.
He's going to put out an album called The Greatest Hit of Mac Descant. All right.
Well, at least he has disc in his surname.
There you
go. But yes, that was not the version that most people use. So this is a bit of a here's a rare chance to hear that lyric.
There's a summer place where it may rain or storm. Summer place, your arms reach out to me, and my heart is free from all care, for it knows there are no gloomy skies when seen through the eyes of those who are blessed with love. And the sweet secret of a summer place is that it's anywhere when two people share all their hopes, all their dreams, all their
That was the Lettermen. We were talking, Stephen. I'm here with Stephen Smith today on Broadway to Main Street. We're looking at film composers. And you mentioned the era where everything had to have a hit song. I guess that was an early version of what we would now call synergy, where the studio heads yes. realized that if you had something on the pop charts, it would help sell the movie. Was that is there a beginning date to that, or is there a kind of bandwidth of a period where that was particularly a marketing scheme?
there's definitely a time period. And one could argue that it starts right with the beginning of the talkies, with things like the Busby Berkeley musicals and the Astaire Rogers series, which had original songs written for them. But those, of course, were musicals. And it was not really until the late 1940s that dramas, that the studios realized that dramas could also benefit from having a hit record. Mona Lisa being one example, Dmitri Tiomkin's Oscar-winning theme for High Noon was one of the biggies. And we're going to hear one that comes sort of at the beginning of that period, which is My Foolish Heart, written by one of Max Steiner's closest friends, Victor Young.
And here is Carmen McRae, My Foolish Heart.
The night is like a lovely tune. Beware my foolish heart. How white the ever constant moon. Take care, my foolish heart. There's a that's hard to see on an evening such as this, for they both give the very same sensation when you're lost in the magic of a kiss. His lips are much too close to mine. Beware my foolish heart. But should our eager lips combine, then let the fire start. For this time it isn't fascination or a dream apart. It's love. This time it's love, my foolish heart. His lips are much too close to mine. Beware my foolish heart. But should our eager lips combine, then let the fire start. For this time it isn't fascination or a dream. It's love. This time it's love, my foolish
separate like two arms open wide. Some you welcome in and some must stay outside. Bowl of rice, bitter tea. Is this all the good earth has? has to offer me. Will I find peace of mind? Does my true love wait behind the China gates? Will I find peace of mind? Does my true love wait behind the China gates? China gates.
That was Nat King Cole with China Gate, a Victor Young melody, not a song we're going to hear in any cabaret anytime soon, but it sounds like it has an interesting provenance.
Victor Young died really early at the age of 57 of a cerebral hemorrhage, and Max was devastated to lose his friend. And the song China Gate that we just heard comes from a film directed by, of all people, Sam Fuller, a really two-fisted director associated with action films, but a very sensitive man who hired Nat King Cole to be an actor in this movie. And he sings the song in the film, as we would say, diegetically as a character to other people. Well, Victor Young had written this song and just a little bit of other music for the film when he died. And as a way of kind of, I think, having his own kind of closure, Max Steiner wrote virtually the entire score himself and gave the money to Victor Young's widow. And as a result, you'll see one of the most unusual screen credits in any movie. When you see the music credit at the beginning of China Gate, it says in big letters, music by Victor Young. And then under that, it says extended by his old friend, Max Steiner.
Oh.
And I'm sure that Max wrote that.
How beautiful. Well, we're getting into this sweet spot here of songs that can be repurposed, that work in a movie, but also work on the pop charts. And our next song is not only my favorite song of all time, but was, I guess, sort of dragged in at the last minute. And that's Laura. And my understanding was they were going to use Sophisticated Lady, Duke Ellington's Sophisticated Lady. And that was tossed out when Preminger became director of the film. And David Raxon's music for that movie is certainly one of the great film noir scores of all time, and yielded a very odd but incredibly compelling song.
It did, and only after Alfred Newman and Bernard Herrmann turned down scoring the movie.
Oh.
This was a rather troubled film. They fired another director, Ruben Namouyan, who we know from Porgy and Bess and so many other things. Preminger replaced him. And Preminger, as I understand it, I knew David Raxon. He was going to go with Sophisticated Lady if David Raxon couldn't come up with something better than Sophisticated Lady by Monday. And he was told this on a Friday. So David had the weekend to come up with a song. And this is really quite early in his career at Fox. He had already worked with Chaplin, sort of helping turn Chaplin's whistling and humming themes into the Modern Times score a few years earlier. But David knew that he had a real opportunity here if he could just come up with a good melody for Laura. Well, he certainly did. And even Bernard Herrmann, who was a little crusty when it came to compliments, said, shows how wrong I was, because Herman thought the film didn't need music. And even Bernard Herrmann recognized that Laura is one of the great songs of all time. And according to David, Cole Porter told him that it was the one song he wished he'd written.
Wow. Well, it's not a typical song, so it requires a masterful lyric. And who better than Johnny Mercer? Here is Dick Hames singing Words by Mercer, music by David Raxon.
Thank you. Laura is the face in the misty light. Footsteps that you hear down the hall. The laugh that floats on a summer night that you can never quite recall. And you see Laura on the train that is passing through. Those eyes, how familiar they seem. She gave your very first kiss to you. That was Laura, but she's only a dream. Summer night that you can never quite recall. And you see Laura on the train that is passing through. Those eyes, how familiar they seem. She gave your very first kiss to you. That was Laura, but she's only a dream.
Love is wrong. It sings a hopeless song. It longs for bitter disappointment and tears. And tears. It calls to all that used to be, and it yearns for someone who was tender but untrue. Love is blind, it's helplessly inclined to bind itself to discontentment and fears. And fears. It dwells on nights that might have been. Love needs nothing more to do. My darling, so I hold each little token we knew. We knew. Endlessly I unfold each word we've spoken. We two. We two. But bad. it gladly weeps when disillusion appears, appears. And so I cling to yesterday while I'm hopelessly in love, while I'm hopelessly in love with you.
June Christie with a haunting melody by David Raxon from The Bad and the Beautiful. I'm fascinated that you knew him. The only thing I knew about David Raxon was I worked with Sondheim, I don't know, about 20, 30 years ago. And I guess when one of his shows, Into the Woods, or maybe it was Into the Woods, was trying out in San Diego, he got to spend some time with David Raxon walking along the beach. And he really felt that Raxon was a cut above most Hollywood soundtrack writers, and obviously, you know, that carries a lot of weight. He was a lot less amused when I referred to him as David Raskin, and definitely gave me one of his inimitable finger wags about that. But he really is such a special composer.
As we heard, a very sophisticated composer, almost too sophisticated for some producers. And that theme was almost thrown out of that very fine Vincent Minnelli drama, but it stayed in. And yes, Sondheim has said he thinks it's one of the best themes written for film. And David was the one who encouraged me to write a biography of Bernard Herrmann when I was 19 years old. So without his encouragement, I don't think I would have had the nerve to tackle that.
Well, God bless him. This is Larry Maslon, your host for Broadway to Main Street, and today we're looking at film composers and the way they work with songs, and who better than my guest today, Stephen C. Smith, author of two wonderful biographies, Max Steiner and Bernard Herrmann, who we're going to listen to, and he's also a magnificent host on the New York Adventure Club webinars, which has become its own little art form, which he has certainly mastered. So let's look at someone who actually did have a Broadway succès d'estime, and it was hardly a hit, but this is Jerome Maras. Am I saying that correctly?
You are indeed.
And he wrote one of the great CinemaScope themes of all time. You can't listen to this and not think you're in a movie theater. So here is his theme from The Big Country.
Thank you.
and the tulip trees are blooming, and there's not another human in view. But us two, it's a lazy afternoon, and the farmer leaves his reaping in the meadow, cows are sleeping, and the speckled trout stop leaping upstream. As we dream, for daisies running riot, and there's no one passing by it to see. Come spend this lazy
That was Irene Krall singing John Latouche's lyrics to Jerome Maras's score to The Golden Apple. Not a hit, but definitely a New York show. What do you think, Steve? I mean, we these guys were in Hollywood. They were, as you were saying, playing poker and sitting by the pool and living in the lap of relative luxury. But was there something about New York City and a Broadway hit, especially post-Oklahoma, that was tantalizing and unattainable to them?
Extremely tantalizing. And every single composer on this list has some history with Broadway, whether it was a very close one like Max Steiner working as a musical director there, or even a Bernard Herrmann, who we'll get to, who aspired to have a Broadway hit. So for all of their success in the movies, all of these men, and they were men, wanted to have a stage hit. They wanted to be Richard Rodgers as well as who they were.
Thank you.
an indelible theme, one of the greatest ever, I'm sure you concur, from North by Northwest.
Yes, based on the rhythm of a Spanish fandango. And when Bernard Herrmann scored this film in 1959 for his partner Hitch, someone at MGM had the temerity to say, well, the movie starts in New York. Shouldn't we have something that sounds kind of Gershwin-y? And Herrmann reportedly looked back at this man and said, this movie is not about New York. It's about the crazy dance between Cary Grant and the world. And I think you have in that what a genius musical dramatist Bernard Herrmann was, because he could have a very intellectual concept for something, but then he wrote music that's pure emotion, whether we're thinking of the all strings score for Psycho or that wonderful music for North by Northwest or the hypnotic music of Vertigo. He was really Hitchcock's perfect composer for 12 years. And it's interesting that Hitchcock wanted to have hit songs in his movies, because the time period we're talking about, the Herman Hitchcock time, runs from the mid-50s to the mid-60s. And that's sort of the height of the thinking of, we've got to have a hit song for this drama. And Dmitri Tiomkin could crank out one of those just about every year. He was also a master at that. But what Hitchcock did very smartly, and the man who knew too much, was he had Livingston and Evans write Que Sera Sera for Doris Day, who plays a singer in the movie. And Herman not only wrote the dramatic score for that movie, but he plays himself the conductor in the Albert Hall sequence. And we see the posters saying Bernard Herrmann conducting the London Symphony, because he was a symphony conductor when he wasn't writing film scores. So that was the happy compromise. Someone else wrote the song. But what we're about to hear is when that doesn't work, because as Hitchcock was under more and more pressure from the studios to have hit records for his movies, the pressure was on Herrmann to try to deliver melodies that were more adaptable to be hits. And we're about to hear two very obscure examples sung by two of the best known musicians around, which shows that it didn't work when you tried to turn a Bernard Herrmann theme into a pop song.
Well, here is Marnie, a single release sung by the one and only Nat King Cole.
Sunlight everywhere, but your world is lonely, Marnie. Oh, Marnie, so lost, yet so lovely. Take my hand and stay with me a while. Let me try to dry the tears beneath your smile. Only love can save you, Marnie. Please love me. Please be mine. I love you, Marnie. Please be mine.
down to the bed, up to the high. Giddy with joy, crazy with fear, these are my nights. You make me dance. Like ice in my paradise is 40 below. This vertigo is driving me insane, my love. This vertigo that has me spinning like a top. Where will it stop? I wish you would be just one way with me. Be warm as you should, or leave me for good, and let me be free. Your changeable heart just tears me apart, you know. It's round and around on this merry-go-round. I go, vertigo, vertigo. This vertigo is driving me insane, my love. This vertigo that has me spinning like a top. Where will it stop? I wish you would be just one way with me. Be warm as you should, or leave me for good, and let me be free. Your changeable heart just tears me apart, you know. As round and around on this merry-go-round I go. Vertigo, vertigo.
Well, that was Billy Eckstein singing the title song from Vertigo, which thankfully never made the final cut, I don't think. But this is by Jay Livingston and Ray Evans, who I adore because they wrote the score to O Captain, one of my famous favorite musicals. Showing again, you can do extremely well in one medium and fail completely in another.
I wouldn't be surprised if Mel Brooks heard that Billy Eckstein recording of the Livingston and Evans Vertigo. And because when you hear Mel Brooks' song High Anxiety from his Hitchcock parody, I don't know. I think it certainly evokes the loopy spirit of it. But I'm sure listeners will be reminded of this scene from this 1978 film.
Well, all I can say is Stephen C. Smith, you win.
High anxiety whenever you're near. High anxiety, it's you that I fear. My heart's afraid to fly, it's crashed before. But then you take my hand, my heart starts to soar. Once more, high anxiety, it's always the same. Anxiety, it's you that I blame. It's very clear to me, I've got to give in. My anxiety, you win. Then you take my hand, my heart starts to soar. Once more, heat change, high anxiety, it's always the same. Hey, anxiety. It's you that I blame. It's very clear to me I've got to give in. My anxiety. And remember, folks, be good to your parents. They've been good to you. You win.
Well, where is the time all gone to? This is Larry Maslon here at Broadway to Main Street. Let's catch up next Sunday at 3:00.